Hello, everyone. My name is Mary, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Mary.
And I'm happy to be here tonight. I remember this room very well. It's a place I came a long time ago when I was hurting and when my life was torn apart. I come from a family that parents drank, and there was violence in the home. There was a lot of jealousy. There was a lot of insecurity in the home. And I come from a large family, and we were poor. And what I saw when I grew up, I didn't want to have that in my life. At a very young age, I saw fear. I didn't know when they would come home from drinking. That's their story. My story is being the child of an alcoholic, growing up in the home and being afraid when the lights would go out, not knowing if there was going to be blood on the floor, broken glass, when that next case of beer was coming in the door. That's what I remember. I used to hate Christmas. Still today, I have a hard time. Try to change things around. I started drinking when I was 16 years old. I had my first drink with a person that we were just hanging out. And when I drank, it was all right. The taste wasn't so-so. It was like, it was okay. I could handle it. But as I kept on drinking, I started getting this feeling of, hey, it took everything away. All that stuff that I felt stuck and shy, and I became more confident and stuff. So I kept on looking forward to these drinking binges. And I didn't have too many of them at 16, 17, 18. I remember going out one night and the person got me some alcohol, and I started acting out right away. As soon as I started to drink, I started to become very bold. I started to become aggressive. I started acting foolish, and the person couldn't handle it. They didn't like me. I remember in Plaque d'Armes, I went swimming in the pond over there while I was waiting for the bus, you know, coming home, and doing things like that, acting out a lot. And that happened a lot when I was drinking. I'd hit a point where I'd start just acting out. I started doing whatever came in my mind to do. And sometimes it was my aggression coming out. I would attack people. I would get jealous over something. I would pick a fight. And it happened sometimes in the bar. I kept on drinking, and my mom said to me, you know what? She says, don't tell me you too one night. She says, not you too, because she knew I had some alcohol. And I didn't understand what she meant by that. It was like, what, me too not drinking or what? A lot of things happened when I got into drinking binges. I met people. And one relationship, I met somebody I really wanted to be with. And I stayed with him for about 3 years. Got serious with this person. This person didn't know that I had a drinking problem, and I didn't know. I just thought, well, you know, stuff happens when I drink. That person turned out not to like me after a while because they saw the other side of me when I drank, what alcohol would change me into, and the personality and all this other stuff coming out. When I had one child at around 18 years old, I came home and I had to tell my parents that I was pregnant. I didn't have any sexual information. It was just like, you don't do anything, but it's pretty hard when you have no birth control and you have you know, you're young and you have your hormones are raging and stuff. And I really loved this guy I was with. Anyways, the baby was not to live. I lost my child at around 19 years old, and then I think that was a turn in my drinking pattern. When my baby died, I was very traumatized. I was very depressed. I wanted to numb out the pain, so I used that as an anesthetic to get rid of it. I wanted to shut down. I wanted to just turn all off, all that feeling, and I would be depressed and I would cry. And that's another thing I've learned, that I don't know how to grieve properly. I only learned this afterwards. But to me, crying was like, you know, I didn't want anybody to see me. I was embarrassed. I didn't want to show my feelings. But when I would go out to drink in the clubs, it would blur it out. So I started not functioning, not getting up in the morning. I didn't want to go to my job. All I wanted to do was run to the bar and start drinking and just, you know, get rid of all that stuff. All reality. I didn't want to be in the reality. I didn't like it. And I would question, why are we alive? Why do people die? What's the world? What's the purpose? And I was looking for the answer in the nightclubs, you know. And of course, you know, everybody has their take on how come we're here. And sometimes that would start a problem, a fight, you know. Some people thought we came from the monkeys, another person said no, you know, and then it would start a big discussion in the clubs. And I'm looking for the answers in a nightclub. Well, why I'm here today. Anyways, I go on drinking and hurting a lot. Very depressed. I didn't want to work. I found myself picking myself off the floor a couple of times, throwing up. I lived in a rooming house because my father said, listen, you know, you get yourself together or you get the hell out. And I said, no, I guess I'm going to have to go. And I took my coat and I left, you know. I had a little bit of money in the bank that I'd saved up from work, and I went and rented a room. And there was veterans from the Army, different background, different culture. Some people were Russian and Polish, and they were very nice gentlemen. They helped me out, you know. They would ask me, if you're stuck, you can take my food. The thing is with that is they drank during the day, and they would sleep. And I thought they were alcoholics. I said, those poor men, they're traumatized from the war, and then they drink, and now they're sleeping, and these are alcoholics. But then I would, like, come out at nighttime, and I would start drinking, and I didn't see nothing wrong with that, because I didn't drink during the day, I was fine. So I lived in that way for a while, and I would just not want to be by myself a lot. I didn't want to be by myself. I couldn't stand being alone with Mary. There was something wrong inside. I didn't want to be by myself. And the only way to do that was to get alcohol. And when you're young and you've only got a few bucks in your pocket, you go down to the bar, you find anybody that'll buy you a drink. They all want to buy you a drink. They send in beer to your table, you can drink all you want. And then the games would start. I would make believe I would be anybody, you know. I'd lie to them, I'd give them false numbers, I'd take off on a taxi on them, I'd tell them I'd go to the restaurant. Sometimes I fell asleep in my food when it was coming. For some reason it always came when I came to the table, I land up face in my food. And that was the thing. And when one night I couldn't make it home, the police said to me, somebody had seen me, this guy pulling me because I was starting to get very tired. And they wanted to bring me with them. And someone stuck their head out, was the guy that took care of the bar. Saw this man dragging me by the coat. He wanted me to go with him, and I was like, leave me alone. But I was having a hard time standing up. So the person in my best interest tried to, you know, call the police, and I thought I was getting escorted home because he said, get in the car, we'll take you home. And I said, holy shit, this is really good. I can't stand up. These guys are nice. They're going to take me home. Well, they didn't take me home. They took me to the police station. And I was fuming. It's like they took my cigarettes off me, and I'm drunk. And I was like, I didn't do nothing wrong. I'm of legal age. And they said, well, you know, if you would stay quiet, you'd be okay in a couple hours. We'll let you out. But no, I didn't want to stay quiet. I wanted my cigarettes, and how dare you, and let me out of here. And I was banging on the door. And so they grabbed me out of there, and then they said, okay, come on, we'll take you home. And then they threw me into the paddy wagon. And they brought me downtown, and I was terrified because nobody knew where I was going. I was banging on the window, Monsieur, Monsieur. And they were mocking me, Monsieur, Monsieur. And I was saying, where the hell are they taking me? And I got scared. I got scared for the first time in my life. I got scared because I said, nobody knows where I am. Nobody knows they picked me up, and they can do what the heck they want to me, and I don't know. But that didn't stop me from drinking. Oh, no, no, no. The next day, I slept it over. I threw up. I remember getting up and throwing up in the toilet over there. And then I went back and they said, you're going to pass court. And I'm like, oh my goodness, pass court. I don't know why. I'm okay. I don't know. And the matron said to me, you know, if you keep on getting drunk like this, they're going to throw you in the jail and they're going to just throw you in there like an alcoholic. I said, what? I'm not an alcoholic. What the heck's the matter with them? I just had a little bit too much to drink and I couldn't make it home. Well, then I devised a plan, eh? I'm not going to get caught like this. Next time I'm putting $20 in my shoe, and I'm going to take a taxi home. So I started to try to do this. You know, I was getting in trouble. But moving on from that, I kept on drinking. And then it was only when I met my second relationship, the person that I wanted to, you know, have a life with. And I just made a deal at that time. I was 20, in my early 20s. And I had said to myself, you know, if I have a child and it's healthy and it survives, I am going to stop drinking. I made a deal with the Creator. I didn't make a deal with the devil. I made it with the Creator. And I said, if that happens. So I'm working and I go out and, you know, I have a baby. It's a baby boy and he's healthy. He's at home sleeping in the bed. I'm sitting at the bar on St. Lawrence Street, and all of a sudden there, whoa, the memory comes. Whoa, what about that deal, Mary, you made with the Creator? You have a child at home. That's what you wanted. And what the hell are you doing here? You know, and I felt really bad. I put my beer down, and I went. And then I wanted to give my son a different life, different from what I had. I wanted it so bad for him, because I know what it was like to grow up in that kind of a home. And I knew that I could do it, but I didn't know how. I just didn't know how. So I went home, and it was like, yeah, you know, we've got to do something. We've got to change our life. So I decided to change, and I wanted to change, but I didn't know how. But what happened there is the change came. My relationship, my partner went this way, and I went that way. And he started going out and taking money and going out, and I started like trying to change him. And I wanted to stay on track. Then about that time, my parents' relationship fell through, and my dad went into the program, and it was through his example and power of example and going to AA. I didn't know what happened to him. It was a miracle, because I didn't think anything could stop him from drinking. My mother left everything, job, everything went. And then all of a sudden he started to change, and he started to care about us, and he started to wanting to help his kids and everything. And I was like, something's going on down there. Maybe he met somebody and I need to go check this out. And I wanted to support him. I wanted to encourage him because it was so positive. So I decided to go down to this Kimberly Club on St. Denis in 1976. And I was like, what's happening here? Huh? What's happening here? And then they're all talking about alcoholics and, are you an alcoholic? And I go, no, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm here to support this person. Oh, yeah, okay, fine. And one girl says to me, it's too bad you're not an alcoholic. I said, what do you mean? Because I saw a lot of older people. She says, oh, it's just too bad because, you know, we could have had something to relate. I was like, you got enough alcoholics in this room, you know, you don't need me to be alcoholic. But as I listened and as I kept on going, and this relationship that I was mourning was falling apart, I decided, you know, there's something that I need to do for myself. And I felt good there. The people gave me love there. The people accepted me there. The people encouraged me. And at about that time, I found out I was pregnant with my ex, and I was really messed up. So I was alone. I was coming into the program. I had another child that I didn't want to support, and I was totally messed up emotionally. I was emotionally bankrupt. And so they kept on encouraging me, and they treated me with love, and they gave me a sense of I count. I count. They gave me love. Unconditional love. That's what I got from the AA program and coming to the meetings. And I met friends. And then they showed me and they taught me how to laugh again. Because where I was down deep, so bloody in depression. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to get out of it. I didn't know if I was going to survive. You know, being a woman and being pregnant and being alone, I did not know how I was going to survive. But I knew that there was something in these meetings that kept me coming. And I kept on coming. And then someone said, oh, you know, you'll take a 3-month chip. I haven't drank. I said, but I don't know if I want to say I'm an alcoholic because, you know, what if I make that commitment? And I didn't want to commit. But anyways, I started to come to the meetings. And then one day, you know, I went to this young generation meeting and I sat there. And something that was said in the room, it made me realize, you know, that this was happening to me in my life. Was caused by alcohol, and it was because of this disease that I had, and I started to become more willing, and I didn't have, and I had a lot of trouble with the higher power in the beginning. I didn't want nothing about God because God took my baby away. He was no good. I closed the door on him. He could have taken an old person. I hated old people because they lived their life, and my baby died, and my baby was young, and I hated old people. I didn't have no reason to hate them except the fact that they lived their life and my baby didn't. And so, you know, I had to look at a lot of that stuff. When I opened the doors, and then one night, that's what happened, was I was on the corner and I had this motorcycle and this other AA member was going to help me because it was broken down. And I go to the stop and this person comes up from the corner and has a glass of wine in their hand. And I couldn't find my sponsor, and I had this fear that I was going to drink. And this person steps out off the sidewalk and asks me if I want a zip of the alcohol. Well, holy crow. It was like they were chasing me to drink, and I felt so paranoid. Oh, my God, please, I need the higher power. I need the higher power. Well, yeah, I do need a higher power because my sponsor wasn't available 24/7. She had a life, too, and then she ended up moving to Vancouver. But as I started to grow, as I started to get myself together, I started to become strong. I started to learn how to stand on my two feet. I lost my other baby while I was in the program. The other baby died at 6 weeks old. I could have went out and drank. But you know, when I looked at it, what would it give me? I would just repeat that same cycle again of crying in my beer and seeing the same thing over and over again, like watching that movie over again. So I decided, no, you know, I went down and I shared my grief with the people in the room. And I got past that. And yes, it did hurt. And yes, I did cry. But yeah, you know what? I walked through that. And after, I kept on going to the meetings. I started getting into the steps. And I started hearing other people talk about their... And I would come in the room and I would want to listen to what they had to say because there was something I was going to take away from their talk. They were going to give me something to go on and keep on. And eventually, it added up to a number of 24 hours, weeks, months, years. And I started to work on myself because I became teachable. I went back to school. I wanted to work. I got a job. And today my life is totally different. I have 4 children now. I have a son that's 30 years old. I'm a grandmother of a 3-year-old in May. And I have a daughter that's 16, going to be that's my blood daughter. And I adopted 3 other children. And I live in Gunnasagi. That's another gift of my sobriety, recognizing with my mom and her struggles. Because my mom was Native, and she married my dad, who's non-Native. And so she got recognized, re-recognized. They finally recognized her that she was. One day they just recognized her. And it was a beautiful thing, you know. She felt she had an identity and a culture. And I hold to that. So I live in Gunnasagi, Oka, and you've heard a lot about that, I guess, in the media. And it can be a beautiful place. The people are beautiful, but we have a lot of struggles, a lot of multi-generational traumas, such as the one that has happened with alcoholism, and that's just one symptom. There are many others. But now I work in my community. I'm a mental health worker, one of the mental health workers, and... I try to live my program. And when I get into, and it hasn't been all rosy, I'll tell you, even after this many years of sobriety, I still can get myself in messes. About 4 years ago, I got mixed up with someone who was drinking. I have a partner at home. I've been with him for 12 years. And I started to, when my mom died 4 years ago, I started to get totally messed up. I didn't know where I was going. I latched onto a person who was unhealthy, who's an active drinker, who has many problems, and what happened is I got emotionally attached to him, and he almost took me down. And then I got scared, because one day I was sitting at his place, and I saw all these empty bottles around, and I thought, what the heck am I doing here? And I ran. I ran to a member's house, and I said, I can't do this anymore, because I don't feel good about myself. I have that to work through, and I am getting help. But you know what? It's... My strength is recognizing my weaknesses. It's recognizing what can harm me and doing something about it. It's the same thing with the first step, admitting that I am powerless over this problem, that problem, whether it's gambling or what, but my addiction is alcohol, and I could replace it with anything else, sex, gambling, but my addiction is alcohol, because that's what really makes me totally lose it. And I'm working on myself day by day. I get support from members in the movement and the program. I get a phone call every once in a while that picks me up. I get connections with people that are living on the street, and that's what gives it to me. I come in and I hear it, and say, you know, and I pick up and I go again, one day at a time. That's what was given to me. I'm proud today, and I can be productive today. I have beautiful children, and I have a loyal partner. I've been really given a lot of gifts, and I just hope that I can keep sober. That's all I want to do is just keep sober, and I want to keep and help anybody else, because that's what I know that works, is if I can put my hand out and help somebody else, that's the way we do it. So one hand here, somebody helped me one time, and I can help them. But I got to be well before I can help anybody else. And that's why I'm here tonight. Nyawa. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mary. I will take the opportunity to thank you personally after the meeting, and I encourage each person here to do that. But on the behalf of the group, Carmela is going to thank you this evening.
Hi, Mary. Thank you very much. I know Mary for many, many